This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. I'm glad to have y'all back. I'm one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich, and I am joined by Mr. Adam Murray. How you doing?
Who are we? Wildcats! Who are we playing? The Wildcats!
Oh, well, yeah, the Wildcats are going to probably be playing the Wildcats, who also play the Wildcats, since we have Kentucky, Villanova, and Arizona, and they're all at the top of the ranks in college basketball, because we're getting that college basketball fever, the March Madness, which is also one of my wheelhouses. Obviously, I talk a lot about the NBA. We do it on a weekly basis on the show, but I absolutely love college basketball. It's one of my favorite things to talk about. I'm almost, like, deadly obsessed with it. You can ask my wife, and we're going to talk a little bit about one part of college basketball that has been directly affecting the NBA over the last 4 or 5 years. But let me just kind of get into it here with Adam. Do you look forward to the NCAA tournament around this time?
I used to be huge into every tournament. I didn't care. The Big West, I don't – who? Utah Pacific? Okay. New England Tractor Training School? I don't care. They're playing. It's tournament time. Uh-huh. It's crazy. But now it's just like – very watered down so far, so early.
Well, your school is URI, right?
Yes.
University of Rhode Island, who's playing in the Atlantic 10. Actually competitive. They have a star player named E.C. Matthews. They might make the NCAA tournament. I'm kind of surprised. My team, LSU, my team in terms of, like, local, I'll get into the team that I really root for the most. But LSU's competitive. But I'm surprised that with URI being kind of competitive that you're not kind of into the fever.
Well, URI has a horrible RPI, and my team is also the Terrapins.
They could win in Barclays in the A-10 tournament.
I
think they could win it.
But no, it's like it could be also like, yeah, I'm a huge Maryland fan, but now they're the Big Ten, and I don't care about the Big Ten.
That is one of the worst moves ever. I'll never understand that, even if it's for business. I'll never understand why Maryland went to the Big Ten.
It could have just been they just felt disrespected, or I don't – maybe they have a – it had to have been business reasons because it really made no sense to go – for really most of these teams. Mm-hmm. We're not going to get into a relocation, but, you know, West Virginia being in
the Big 12.
In the Big 12.
After being in the Big East. You know, look at the ACC, for Christ's sake. You know, the Atlantic Coast Conference. Some of those are on the – I don't know if anyone – or even near the Atlantic Ocean.
Oh, I remember the old Big East with their – 55 teams.
South Florida being in the Big East, yeah.
South Florida and DePaul. Like, oh, Chicago is the Big East now. Like, yeah. Give me a break.
At least the American Conference, at least you can agree that they're all American schools. I don't know if all the players are Americans. But you know what I'm saying.
The American Conference is just – they really
– Hey, home of the national champion UConn Huskies, dude.
Yeah, UConn Huskies, who are like sixth in the conference, and
yeah, they're not going in.
If you have any conference where Tulsa,
I don't think they
is sort of on the top of your conference. Yeah, it's not a conference that's really competitive.
Yeah, I hate to pick on Chris Criscolo, who you might listen to on this podcast soon, but if UConn makes it, they're gonna have to, they got a lot of headway to make, kind of like Rhode Island. LSU might be in. I hope they are. Fingers crossed. But we're gonna actually be talking about a different SEC team, and that is, like, as you tease with the Wildcats, it is the Kentucky Wildcats. Obviously, Kentucky is like the standard bearer of college basketball. It is what you want your program to be. They've been at the height of their powers before UCLA's dominance in the 60s, around the same time as North Carolina, a little bit after Kansas, who, I mean, I think they got a little bit of a head start since, you know, the guy who taught there invented the game of basketball, but not too far after Kansas. And Oklahoma – it used to be called Oklahoma City, I believe. Later became Oklahoma State under Hank Iva. And some other schools in the Upper East Side with in New York like Loyola and I'm trying to think of some of the other smaller schools, CCNY. Kentucky sort of came into dominance in the 50s and 60s underneath Adolph Rupp. I am definitely not old enough to know anything about Adolph Rupp. Do you know anything about Adolph Rupp and his years in Kentucky?
The only thing about Adolph Rupp is just like, as much as I know about Adolph Coors, just very unfortunate first names these days.
Well, you do know he was on the losing end of the Texas Western game where they the first team ever started five black players, so a lot of people thought that Adolph Rupp was a racist. So yeah. You know, they had some very famous players get through that go through those range, you know, Frank Ramsey, Cliff Hagan, Pat Riley, Louis Dampier, a lot of Dan Issel in the early 70s. A lot of really good players came out of Kentucky around that time. Then there was Joby Hall, who was embroiled in a very heated rivalry with Denny Crum at the University of Louisville. And he had a lot of good players go through his reigns because he had coached, I think, from the early 70s until the mid 80s. And he had some really good players go through there. Sam Bowie, the late Mel Turpin, Kyle Macy, Jack Givens, who scored like a million points in the national championship game in 1978, Kenny Skywalker, Dirk Benefield. Do you remember anything about those players or teams?
Before my time.
That was a little before. Even Patrick Ewing and the Georgetown Hoyas and them when they played Sam Bowie?
The Sam Bowie is sort of the start of where things started, you know, began, but you know, again, that's just the short shorts era, which we all try to sort of, at least me, sort of get that out of my, push out of the mind.
All right. And then you got Rick Pitino. Well, there was Eddie Sutton there for about 4 or 5 years, and then he got caught in a paying scandal that caused the Kentucky program to go on probation. That's when Rick Pitino took over. He had been in Providence. He went and took over with the New York Knicks, and then he went back to college and took over at Kentucky. He built a pretty nice pair of teams over there. Some in the early 90s that included guys like Travis Ford, Jamal Mashburn, Tony Delk, a lot of really good players there. They played in that great, great game against Duke in 1992. Cheap plug for the ESPN 30 for 30 show. I hate Christian Laettner because Laettner was the one that hit that game-winning shot in Philadelphia in the Elite Eight in 1992. Did you watch that game when you were younger?
Yeah, I remember. I remember that. That was
best game you ever saw in college?
No, there was.
That's a surprise.
No, because if you know, like I used to have, you know, I used to go to URI games for like 10 years, and
oh yeah, like when Lamar Odom hit that game winner against Kansas, that's a great
Lamar Odom.
Ever.
There was like a Temple game. It was like double overtime, and it's always that one obscure game which is super intense. But the question I have, just getting away from URI, when Pitino came back to college, do you think that sort of began the era now as basketball as a business and starting to funnel players to the NBA?
Now, when you say back to college, you mean in the early, in the late 80s when he took over at Kentucky or when he went
yes.
to Louisville? Okay, the Kentucky years.
The first time around with, you know, getting – because, you know, but the teams before weren't that – he built the powerhouse himself by getting Antoine and
yeah,
Nash.
But you also had – well, North Carolina was pretty good, but the late Dean Smith, rest in peace, he was more built on, you know, trying to make these players better as not only as players but as people. UCLA was almost a different entity, you know, John Wooden and then the big benefactor there. I don't know if you know this guy's name, but his name was Papa Sam Gilbert. He basically paid. He was kind of like a big time booster that would help the players sort of live in different quarters and kind of help their. He was basically a payoff guy back when the NCAA didn't have rules against it. So UCLA was funneling so many good players who would wind up in the NBA. But to speak to what you're talking about with Kentucky at with Rick Pitino, I think Rick Pitino in 1996 was one of the first ones alongside Jerry Tarkanian at UNLV in the early 90s. It was one of the first times that a coach had built a college team or a college program that was so knee-deep in talent that it was almost a matter of when that they would go to the NBA, not a matter of if.
Yeah,
you know.
As opposed to the tradition of Duke, the tradition of UNC.
Yeah, it's not about going to the NBA and boosting your stock. It was about playing your hardest in college and trying to win a national championship.
Things had changed from, okay, you can leave as a junior if you're really good now to, you know what, leave as a sophomore. We don't Well, I'll get somebody else to replace you. And
I think you have a point there, you know, because remember, he almost got Tracy McGrady. Tracy McGrady was going to go to Kentucky. There was a lot of players from that one. If you listen to the One and Done episode, we did one a few, like 6 or maybe 5 months ago, where a lot of those guys were going to go to Kentucky, and they didn't because they decided to go to straight to the NBA. And Rick Pitino was bringing in a lot of great talent. He had so much good talent that he left them behind in 1998 to take over as the head coach of the Boston Celtics. And he left behind a team that won a national title without him. And the head coach was Tubby Smith.
Yeah, it was just his players, and the only problem was he decided to draft them all, thinking they were good for me then, they could totally be good now.
Sir, Derek Anderson, Walter McCarty, and Antoine Walker. Now, I think Walker was already there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, McCarty was there. McCarty, too. McCarty and Walker were already in the NBA, whereas Tony Delk didn't start with the Boston Celtics. He wound up playing there, but it was actually after Pitino had left. But
but it was just one of those
Mercer he brought in. Derek
Mercer he brought in. That was the great Tim Duncan consolation prize.
Yes. And well, that was and also Chauncey Billups, who he eventually traded. So I don't know. You just sound off about Boston Celtics because you were around that area when Rick Pitino was there. What did you think of the Kentucky players as NBA players?
Not stubborn or just short-sighted or not really having a clue, but it's just your players who are good in one thing aren't going to necessarily be good. Like, we all love Saved by the Bell. Mm-hmm. Saved by the Bell, the college years, not so good.
Hey, speak for yourself.
I
like the college years. Like, the one where Kelly and Zach got married, the movie, that's a good one.
That was a different special. That wasn't
yeah,
the one
that's
with
still
the Bob Golic and...
But it's still the college years because you get married during your college years. So that special counts as Saved by the Bell, the college years.
But it's just, I know my players. I can coach them. I know them better. I've scouted them. That's like every time you see like a, when NFL and Pete Carroll went to the Seattle, oh, well, he's going to get all his USC players because he wants them. Then he didn't draft them. It's just like, well, wait a minute.
Look at Chip Kelly with the Philadelphia Eagles.
Trying to get Mariota.
The Philadelphia Ducks.
Yeah, it's just, at some point you have to say, I can build around other people that I've recruited when they were 18, so.
Well, it's also a matter of trust. Like, these players inside and out, so you bring them to the NBA because they have the talent to play in the NBA, and you think you can, like you said, as a word, funnel it and turn it into something tangible in the NBA and turn them into good players. But it doesn't work that way, and I think Pitino got a pretty rude awakening that just because you're familiar with guys that have pro talent doesn't mean that they're going to max out at their best. Go ahead.
You can get one or two players. You just can't keep getting, these guys I know, I'm good here, we've got it. You can pick one out from it as your, this is my prize guy, I can teach him. But the rest, there's reason people are college superstars, like, Jimmer Fredette.
Doug McDermott.
Yeah, McDermott, who are awesome there, and also in the NBA, they just fizzle out immediately because their game isn't set up for it.
I don't know if McDermott's fizzled out yet.
I just said that because you were so high on him for the draft and the previews. Like, oh, McDermott's gonna.
I believe in him. We need to find one who's not like a token white boy. A guy who was really great in college, but just didn't pan out. I'm trying to think.
Okay, we're talking NCAA. Remember, Randolph Childress owned the NCAA, ACC
at Wake Forest. You're right. Miles Simon didn't really do anything. Jason Williams suffered a motorcycle accident.
The point is you could build a college super team, but to build an NBA super team where everybody has the prototypical height, how many 7-footers do you see in college who are good? 4 or 5 maybe?
Yeah, like legitimate NBA type players. Yeah, maybe 4.
Yeah, exactly. As opposed to you'll see 4 next week on your road trip.
Yes.
So you really have not some limitations, and you could bring, let's say, let's say, just for sake of argument, Antoine was the superstar from that time. Okay, you're my guy. I know you. I trust you. But then you're taking, well, oh, he's, you know, he know, I know Ron. He knows Ron Mercer and he knows Walter. They could all play again. We could reunite them.
Yeah. And the other key difference between the NBA and college is obvious is that in the NBA, great players don't go away. You know, in college, you know, it used to be back in the 80s. It was after 3 years most of the time. And then mm-hmm. the 90s, it started to turn into like maybe 2 or 3 years. And then they would be gone and you had to start over and maybe kind of fill the well up again. In today's era now, it's 1 year. And then you start over again. You have to find the next big thing. And then you kind of gravitate towards that. In the NBA, these guys, if you're a great player, you never leave. Like the guy that you dealt with last year, you got to play against him again. And there's a good chance he's better than he was the year before. In college, you don't have to deal with that anymore.
Even if you just, you know, just look back at, you know, just check back to the podcast, you know, a couple weeks ago, Etuan Moore had a game-winning three. He's been in the league for like 5-6 years.
Mm-hmm.
You have people in college, you know, they're all, this guy is still hanging around. Is he anything special? No, but he's still better than, you know, what you are. And
let me ask you a question. You put together the 12 best college players, and you put together the 12 best EuroLeague players. Who wins and how much?
I would say probably the EuroLeague players.
By about 10 points?
I would say 15 maybe.
I would kind of feel like the EuroLeague team would win by about 10 points.
I only say that because the EuroLeague team would also include players who are 30 and are professionals.
Exactly.
You have young kids who will, you know, again, what happens when the pressure starts coming? You have people – you could put it against the top 12 college kids and put them against the 76ers. Mm-hmm. The 76ers should still win handily.
You know, here's a story before we get away from this. Like, I was watching EuroLeague a few years ago, and the Lakers played, I think it was Olympiacos. You know who was one of the star players there? It was a guy named Pete Michael. And it sort of took me back, and I couldn't believe it. Pete Michael had played at Cincinnati when Kenyon Martin was there. And they also had, remember Steve Logan and DeMar yep. Johnson? Well, Pete Michael was a guard on that team, and I remember watching it. He was a grown man. And I remember thinking, man, if a college kid had to play a guy like Pete Michael right now, they'd be in trouble. Not because that guy's more talented than them, but the experience and the repetition.
Yeah, it's just, again, the repetition, even if you're just saying, you know, the Americans, all the Americans in Europe are just people who are undersized, but are still, you know, you'll see just, you know, if you just go to any random EuroLeague team, you'll see a name or two, you know, like, oh, holy crap, he's still there. I remember him. He was awesome in college. He's just, you know, it wasn't his fault. He's 5'11".
Mm-hmm.
He's still shooting, you know, like Sebastian Telfair. It's just an example of a player like him who should have just gone to Europe and he could have been a hero out there as opposed to getting 10-day contracts now and bouncing around.
Yeah, but it didn't work out for Emmanuel Mudiay as much in China. You know, the same thing with Brandon Jennings.
Brandon Jennings, he was okay. Europe was like, well, we know you're doing a one-and-done thing. Why should we bother to train you? Mm-hmm. That's why more kids haven't gone there. Emmanuel Mudiay thing is just he got injured, so I think they just shut him down.
I can see your point there.
The Chinese team went and got, I think, I want to say Will Bynum was his replacement.
Oh, really? Wow.
They got somebody, and like they're playing just as well with the replacement, so I think his camp was just like, you know what? You averaged your 30 points. You're good, so we don't need to show anything more. Why go back?
Sure. And back on topic for this with the Kentucky team that we're talking about because of the fact that Rick Pitino had kind of failed in Boston with his players. That obviously means he left Kentucky to take that chance. And he couldn't go back even though he didn't go too far away when he went to his next college stop, and that was the University of Louisville. He's done okay at Louisville. He's had some NBA guys like Francisco Garcia and Terrence Williams and Earl Clark. And he's got another one coming out pretty soon named Montrezl Harrell. He's had some really good teams there, but I don't remember too many of the really good NBA elite players. What do you think of Rick Pitino's Louisville teams?
Well, his Louisville teams are now building college teams.
True.
The only one who's from Louisville who really has done anything, who is sort of a shock to everybody, is Jordy Dang.
Gorgui Dang, yeah, true.
He's he's the only. But he's building players like, okay, I know my system. I can't out recruit Kentucky, mm-hmm. so I'm going to get people who can you know, I can trust, play within the system. And, you know, you're not seeing lottery picks coming out of Louisville these days.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned a few of them, like Garcia and other ones that did okay. I apologize. Actually, Gorgui James from the Senegal. I said that he was from Nigeria. He's from Senegal. But, you know, I remember a guy named Edgar Sosa. He didn't do anything. Peyton Siva, haven't seen much of him. Russ Smith's already been traded once. And so, yeah, he's kind of built really good college teams. I think you make a good point there, which kind of tells us the fact that it might be the Kentucky system, the fact that it's the Big Blue, and the fact that they have all the banners and all the history, and they have the Rupp Arena, and they have that track record of having pro players go there. Under the Tubby Smith era from the late 90s into the late 2000s, they sort of took a hit, even though they did get some pretty good players to go there. Guys like Nazi Muhammad, Tayshaun Prince, Keith Bogans, Rajon Rondo, and Kalina Azubuike, who was a role player. Some good players.
They were, you know, I guess the thing about Tubby Smith is I'm just sort of amazed that you don't really realize that he was there for 10 years.
Yeah.
It just seemed like, oh, I remember he flunked, you know, he was horrible in Kentucky. And it was like, oh, wow, he was really there for a bit.
Kentucky fans are still embattled about Smith because he did win the national championship in 1998. He put together a great team in 2003, a great college team. They lost to Dwayne Wade and Marquette in the Elite Eight. And then they had a really good team in 2005, and they lost in double overtime to Michigan State. So they had a lot of times where they got really close to the Final Four after 1998, but they didn't get back. And then their records started to slip in 2005, 6, and 7. And it started to feel like Kentucky was just another SEC team while Florida was winning back-to-back championships, and the Kentucky faithful got really restless. And he left for Minnesota, which kind of – it felt like a firing, but it wasn't really a firing. You know, one of those moves where they move downward because they know that they're bound to get fired eventually?
Yeah, we'll let you leave before we get rid of you. And
yes.
You know, he did win the – did he win the NIT, or his team won the NIT last year, didn't they?
He built? I don't remember, but I do remember that there was – he had a player named Randolph Morris who had a weird – kind of a purgatory situation with his eligibility where he declared for the draft, but he got back into college after he wasn't selected. So the NCAA let him play, but it was one of those things where after he was done playing his final year at Kentucky, he was immediately eligible as a free agent in the NBA. So he went from playing in college in the NCAA tournament to immediately going to the NBA on a 10-day contract, maybe a week later, you know, which was a bit of a rare occasion. But he left for Minnesota. The replacement was Billy Gillespie, who had coached at Texas A&M, and he did not do a great job. His top players were Joe Crawford and Jody Meeks. And then after 2 years and an NIT appearance, Gillespie was fired. And then comes in the main crux of this entire episode, and that is the entry of John Calipari into the University of Kentucky. Now, there's a lot of different threads to this needle here because John Calipari had coached at UMass and he was actually the coach of a team that had Marcus Camby in 1996. They had only one loss, and they played Kentucky when Rick Pitino was there in the Meadowlands, and they lost in the Final Four. Then he left, just like Pitino did. He left to go coach the New Jersey Nets, got to the playoffs, but got fired maybe two seasons later. And then
he went to the NBA, but he didn't leave UMass too cleanly. I think.
They took away the wins because it turned out that Marcus Camby got paid.
Yeah,
he was not implemented in the punishment. Like he wasn't named in the punishment. It was one of those things where the coach kind of dodged the responsibility. Now, obviously, with the Jim Boeheim news that came out that, you know, that he's going to be suspended for all these games, they lose all these scholarships, they've changed the rules now with the policy on their investigations where the head coach takes more responsibility for infractions than he did in the past. So if it had happened now, John Calipari would have been suspended. But back at that time, it was sort of the blame was posted on assistant coaches, runners, and agents, and Calipari sort of dodged any punishment.
Well, that's the thing. You always find people to take the fall for you.
Yes.
You stay too high up to be touched. And, you know, the Boeheim thing is just garbage. Like, you shouldn't take
You're not
away.
A fan of the Boeheim punishment?
You shouldn't punish, you know, kids getting scholarships because not all of them are going to be one and doners. You're going to have people. The only people who are suffering are those who will probably need the scholarship and those who are there all 4 years and those who probably benefit the most. And just like, why are you punishing the future people for Fab Mello who happened?
I hate when punishments are levied where they're trying to set an example. I hate it. Where, like, that's what happened with the Saints with the bounty scandal. It's the same thing that happened with USC, where they're trying in the football team with Reggie Bush. Where if you don't do things our way, we're gonna make an example out of you and try to teach everybody else a lesson not to do what you did. And I don't like that. Everything is unique. Everything has a different scenario. And with Boeheim and this YMCA that had a lot of payouts go through different assistant coaches and people that aren't even affiliated with the basketball program anymore, I don't think Boeheim necessarily ran a dirty program, which is what the NCAA was trying to basically say when they said that there was a lack of institutional control. But the idea that Jim Boeheim at the Syracuse program was basically – You know, allowing all these runners to pay their players. I just don't know. I don't see it that way. I do think there's a little bit of oversight there that Boeheim did ignore, but how much of it he did ignore, I don't think we'll ever know. And Boeheim will never talk.
I think it's just a lot of the, like, you know, I don't care. The kid said he wanted to come here. You know, he's here. Like, I think we mentioned this in the one and done thing. Like, OJ Mayo's friend texted Tim Floyd to say, I'm coming to USC. Mm-hmm. And, like, everybody was shocked by it. It's just, there's so many people behind the scenes and so many people in these kids' ears. I think the coach is like, I don't care. I'm here to schedule these games and here to prep for the upcoming Pitt game.
Yeah, O.J. Mayo was one of the original one-and-done guys when he went to USC. He was predated by Greg Oden and Kevin Durant in the 2006 season. Another guy who was a one-and-done the same year as O.J. Mayo was Derrick Rose. Now, John Calipari went back to college just kind of almost the same exact time Rick Pitino did. This is weird how this is working, huh? And he went over to Memphis. He had some good teams at Memphis. He almost scored on a couple of recruits, guys like Kendrick Perkins and Amari Stoudemire, but they wound up going to the NBA. So he had good teams in Conference USA at Memphis, but they weren't like great teams. Then he started to build some pretty good teams behind guys like Darius Washington and Rodney Carney and Sean Williams and Earl Barron. And then it started, and then things really changed when he got Derrick Rose. That was the first true one and doneer in John Calipari's day.
Yeah, and also with Memphis, didn't leave too cleanly there with Derrick Rose.
Oh, here we go again. Derrick Rose, there are rumors – well, they're not rumors. There are pretty much valid reports that Derrick Rose did not actually take his ACT, that someone took it for him and put his name on it. So he was actually 2 years later declared ineligible for the entire 2008 season. So the entire season that Memphis played under Derrick Rose, his only year in college, was considered moot. Once again, John Calipari not implemented in the punishment.
Yeah, of course. It's just, you know, it was like, you know, the Jim Harrick thing. It's just, all right, he left UCLA kind of
shady. That was his son who did that at Georgia, though.
No, but it's saying he left UCLA shadily. He left URI kind of shadily. And then Georgia, his hand got caught because he got too close, you know, because his son got implicated. It's like, okay, you have this pattern. And Calipari is sort of, he's been good now. Because the system has changed, but, you know, again, didn't leave Memphis too cleanly.
We're talking about because he knows Adam, obviously, we're talking about how he's from URI and Jim Herrick was the coach there after UCLA. We're talking about Jim Herrick's son. He when he was at the University of Georgia and they had a couple of really good players. One was Reese Gaines. Jim Herrick's son was running a college course where it was teaching the principles of basketball, and the exams were incredibly easy, the type of questions that a fourth grader could answer without
fail. How much is a three-pointer worth?
How much is a three-pointer worth? is this a square or a rectangle? I'm pretty sure there's a PDF file of the exams on the internet if you ever have to check them out. They're pretty funny, and Georgia paid the price very dearly in terms of probation, and Herrick left in shame, has never coached again. But John Calipari didn't have to leave in shame in Memphis because he left about a year before that actually happened because he took over at Kentucky. And so this is where really the Kentucky effect, quote unquote, began with NBA, and college. And let's kind of start here. First of all, the big mystery man behind all of this is William Wesley, who's a guy named Worldwide West. He's a guy who works mainly as an agent. He's best friends with guys like LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony, very, very tight with all those guys, a lot of NBA connections. But he's not really an agent. He's kind of one of those guys who's more of like an advisor. So do you think that his influence with NBA connections helped out with getting some of these recruits to Kentucky?
Well, it was that, and the strategy changed. It was no longer, you know, well, you're paying these guys, you're taking their AC. Now that sort of one and done became accepted, it's just sort of, look, man, you just got to get through your first semester. The second semester, you're going to go pro, so you don't need to show up to classes after December.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just need 3 solid months from you, and, you know, your talent will put, you know, your talent, my coaching, will put you over the top.
Well, the only way that can hurt now is the new APR, which is academic progress ranking or rating or whatever it is. And the only way that hurts is if the grades are bad. It's not necessarily how long you stay at school or how many semesters you're actually in class. It's how low your GPA is. And that's what happened to UConn and a lot of the other smaller teams in the – I think it was in the SWAC where they had a lot of smaller southern schools that weren't able to make the grade on the APR because the GPAs were so low. So
yeah, but just again – take the intro to basketball course. Take the home ec course. Just take all these 101 courses.
Yeah, North Carolina's familiar with those classes.
Yeah, the end of their football team, Butch Davis got caught with those, and just, you know, he's working the system now.
Yeah,
well, I don't see coaching as opposed to, you know, every year, oh, well, I have 5 recruits. Well, yeah, and then you kick out the 5 kids, most of them who shouldn't have been kicked out.
You talk about work. Oh, go ahead.
You know, sort of the fringe prospects who, just Daniel Orton.
Well, you talk about working the system, and I don't think anybody's worked the system in college basketball the way John Calipari has with the one-and-done system. Guys that, like you're saying, will only spend 1 year knowing that they have high NBA draft stock, likely to be a lottery pick, likely to get a good first-round rookie contract and make their way, and that college is really just kind of a stop as an amateur to show what you can do to the NBA, do for the NBA scouts before you declare, because you can't declare because you got to be a year removed from high school. His first big one was Derrick Rose. I also forgot to mention Tyreke Evans, who played a year at Memphis, and he was wound up going 4th or 5th in the 2009 draft to the Kings. And then came the big class. Now, this class was going to go to Memphis. All of them were, except for Daniel Orton. Daniel Orton had already declared to go to Kentucky. But these are the 4 guys that he brought in. He brought in John Wall, who was like the top point guard. There was DeMarcus Cousins, who was the top power forward. He brought in Eric Bledsoe, who was one of the better point guards. It was either going to be wherever Calipari goes or Florida. And the other one was a guy named Darnell Dotson, who was Darnell Dotson was a transfer. But the other guy was Xavier Henry, who was going to go play at Memphis. When Calipari left for the Kentucky job, Xavier Henry went to Kansas. And so Bledsoe, Wall, and Cousins went with Calipari to Kentucky.
Yeah, which again says a little something, you know, something might be up a little bit if you're just following the coach to his new place as opposed to, mm-hmm. you know, getting recruited to the school and whatnot. Also, what, you know, Josh Pastor took over for him, and what did he really do with Memphis? What have they done since?
They've had good seasons in the smaller conferences that they were in before they changed to the American Conference. But in terms of postseason success, not even remotely close to what John Calipari's done.
Exactly. So you're getting the top, you know, we'll say 3 of the top 10 high school kids, and they all mysteriously follow you to your new school where mm-hmm. there's all those scholarships are mysteriously open at the time.
Well, the thing too is that you get a lot of these one and doneers, but it's not a guarantee that you're going to be good. Now, the way that Calipari took advantage of the system was by getting all of these one-and-doners to at least somewhat kind of play together as a team, because they know that success and success brings television time. TV time brings, you know, inflated prospects on your draft stock. So guys like John Wall, Patrick Patterson, who was already at Kentucky, Cousins, Bledsoe, Orton, they all played really well. They only had two losses in the regular season. In Calipari's first year, they were like a top, they were number one, they were like a one seed in their region. They did lose to West Virginia in the Elite Eight. But do you think that when they all went into the first round of the NBA draft, all of them, Orton went to the Magic, Bledsoe went to the LA Clippers, Cousins went to the Kings, Patterson went to the Rockets, John Wall went number one overall to the Washington Wizards. Do you think that was kind of the first sign that things were about to change in college basketball?
That was basically, it was like, oh my God, can you believe it? And then you could say, yes, things have changed, but Duke had, what was it, like 99 or 2000? They had like four people in the lottery.
1999, they had the most NBA team. Like,
it was Elton Brand, Trajan Langdon.
Trajan Langdon, Will Avery. Elton Brand, and the other one was Corey McGetty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Chris Carrawell and Shane Battier were the other guys who were just good college players.
You had teams going, you know, putting three, four guys up at once, and then, you know, it's the Calipari, he knows how to put teams together. Mm-hmm. And maximize yourself within your team to sort of like showcase your, it's almost like a showcase. Like, here's what my guy can do. Here's what Daniel Ort can do. He's going to be your defensive guy. I need to move him for next year's models to come in.
But it's a very slippery slope to where you try to make it as a showcase for somebody's talents in the next level and keeping them on the main goal of we need to win.
Well, if you have basically an AAU all-star team already, do you think Vanderbilt's ever going to put together a class like that? South Carolina is hoping to go 500 like once every 4 years, it seems.
Florida came close, but it's usually just – it's not – what they had with Horford, Brewer, and Noah is once in a generation. Like, you never get NBA players that stick around for 3 years like that. Almost never. You know, what they got was rare. And they've had success since those years, but those guys weren't NBA players. Guys like Patrick Young and Scottie Wilbekin and Eric Murphy, they weren't NBA players. You know, they, or like legit NBA players, not like the ones at Kentucky.
Well, the same thing with Horford and Noah. Corey Brewer, you know, you're the third best on the team, and then you're getting to the
Lee Humphries.
How good, you know, who's the best player on the team? How good are you if you're the fourth option on this really good team? Yeah, they're going to win because they have more talent, and then college, talent wins out over heart.
Because I think Calipari has convinced these players that even though you don't get the most points per game and you don't get all the minutes, because if you're successful and you look good doing it, that's all the scouts need to see.
It's like the storied franchise thing. As you know, as much, you know, I'll just quietly just say this through my teeth, but like, you know, like college football in Alabama, All right, you see the people who are all in the NFL, they're all succeeding. Okay, I know I'm not going to be the guy who's going to be the all-star. Mm-hmm. I know I just have to buy into the system and it will help me for my future.
Yeah. So we had that – we talked about the 2010 first-round draft class that they had. Then they had their next wave, and the freshmen that they had brought in that year in 2011 were Brandon Knight, Terrence Jones, Deron Lamb. They came in, and then the veterans that stuck around were DeAndre Liggins and Josh Harrelson, who was a center. That team went to the Final Four, even though it was a little bit of a rougher journey than it was for Wall, Cousins, and Bledsoe's crew. They kind of coasted their way through a lot of games until they played West Virginia, whereas with that Kentucky team with Brandon Knight, they had to go through a little bit of a tough stretch where they had to play – they had some close games against teams like Princeton. They barely beat Ohio State, the number one overall seed. They beat North Carolina by by only a handful in the Elite Eight to get to the Final Four, and then they lost to Kemba Walker and UConn in the Final Four in Houston, Texas. Do you remember anything about that team?
The
2011 squad with Liggins and Harrelson and Brandon Knight.
Okay, they were just, it wasn't the, it was supposed to be, they've re-upped and they've reloaded, but they weren't as good. I wasn't, you know, Brandon Knight wasn't that impressive to me, but, and, you know, the thing about Kentucky with them was sort of, you said with Liggins and who was the other holdover, Harrelson?
Harrelson, yeah. They called him Jorts because he wore jean shorts to his recruiting trip.
Yeah, like, are you sort of damaged goods if you make it to a sophomore at Kentucky?
You know, as a sophomore, no. I think there's a couple of guys there that that staying around as seniors means that you were basically a walk-on, that you didn't really max out on your potential compared to some of the pro guys. But let me tell you, being a senior in Kentucky means you're a pretty good college player. Like if you stayed 4 years and you played somewhere else, like say a Vanderbilt or a South Carolina, he would have been a star player there. Look at Kyle Wilcher at Gonzaga, because he was recruited at the same time as Anthony Davis and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. Well, he couldn't cut the mustard in Kentucky, and he transferred to Gonzaga. Now he's the best player at Gonzaga.
Yeah, he transferred up, but I'm just saying, you know, you're not gonna rescind scholarships. That's just, you know, for just because, well, I want to get this new guy. You just, you know, that's unheard of. Mm-hmm. And crazy. I don't even know if you can even – well, you probably can't do that. You could do
– well, we'll get to that when we get to the 2013 squad, but I want to get to the epic 2012 squad because that's the team that won the first national title for John Calipari, so far his only one. And, I mean, they had – Michael Kidd-Gilchrist was a legit player anyway. He was a big-timer in the prep circuit. Marcus Teague was a really good player out of Indianapolis. Rick Pitino was hot after him, and he went to Kentucky anyway. Terrence Jones and Deron Lamb both came back as sophomores because their draft stock wasn't high enough, so they wanted to come back just to see if they could win a title there for Calipari. And then they got the big guy out of Chicago, Anthony Davis. Now, Anthony Davis was a guy that sort of bloomed as a junior, and Kentucky snagged him early in his senior year before all the other teams were kind of hot after him. Anthony Davis, to me, is sort of one of those exceptions. He's almost like a Lou Alcindor. Like, when you get him, that's all you need. You don't need the other guys.
Well, that's just – I wouldn't say it's just because you get him. It's just you get a dominant big man, period.
Yeah, like Jahlil – do you think Jahlil Okafor is on that level? Just to get away from that top for a second.
I think he's just a notch below right now. He's not – if you're going to compare him to Anthony Davis.
Once you get to this tournament, once you get to this episode, you know, Jahlil Okafor will probably be playing the NCAA tournament for Duke. What was your question again?
Oh, am I comparing him to Anthony Davis?
Yeah, like let's just do a side-by-side comparison.
Davis was better.
Yeah, because of the defense, the 4.6 blocks a game.
Exactly.
I mean, he was incredibly dominant. He only scored 2 points in the national championship game against Kansas, but because he had, like, I think he had, like, 18 rebounds or, like, something like that, and he had, like, 6 blocks. He was just – defensively, he was so dominant. And also, that Kentucky team, because of the experience, because Darius Miller, who was, like, a big-time guy when he came in as a freshman under Billy Gillespie, he stayed all 4 years at Kentucky. And because he was there, because Jones was there as a sophomore, because Lamb was there as a sophomore after playing in the Final Four the year before – not only did they have experience, they were very efficient on the offensive end. Offensively, they were a really good team. I also don't think Michael Kidd-Gilchrist gets proper credit because I thought he was a finished product in college. I thought
no,
he was great.
No, he...
I disagree there. I thought he was great in college.
I thought he was just, not to compare, not to say Corey Brewer again, but it was just he was just going to be a defensive guy. Like he's not. He doesn't have a shot.
Yeah, but athletically he was so good that nobody could really touch him at the small forward spot, kind of like Davis at the center spot.
But I think that was just more of a college thing. I didn't personally think it would translate, and like he'll just become this defensive specialist, become this lockdown D guy, and that's what he'll, you know, focus on. And maybe he'll develop a jumper. Maybe he'll, because he didn't have an outside game. It was just you know, like I said, athletic, just a slasher.
I have my opinion of this, so I'm sort of going to cheat because I already know the answer to the question anyway, but I want to ask you too. Do you think the 2012 Kentucky team with their one-and-dones winning a national title, do you think it sort of changed the opinion of a lot of things in college basketball?
No, because their one-and-dones, they weren't the first one-and-dones to do it. Once you win the championship, you can say, I have completed my goal here. What am I going to chase it for? Chase the back-to-back?
Well, that's what Florida did, yeah.
Well, that's, again, we mentioned that's just a rare case. Mm-hmm. For the most part, you know, it's one goes, they all go. Should some of them have gone? We've both, with the one-and-done special, we both agreed, no, they shouldn't have. But all you can say is, I came here to win a championship. I did. I will forever be known as a college champion. What else do I have to prove here?
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like it did in this way. Not necessarily the fact that the one and done works. Well, the one and done obviously worked the moment Derrick Rose almost won a national championship. And also it worked when Carmelo Anthony won a national championship. You know, you could go one and done and win it all. I think that was already proven before the 2012 Kentucky team won it all. I think what it changed was the idea of veteranship and leadership, because a lot of people looked at sophomores and said, well, you're a sophomore, so you don't really have the experience compared to a lot of the other teams. In college these days, with all the turnaround, all the early entries in the draft, all the transfers, a sophomore is actually a pretty experienced player now.
Yeah.
It's crazy, but it's true.
You're the experienced one. If you're a senior, either you just had a crazy year out of nowhere, or there's something wrong with you. You're 22 and coming in, huh?
Yeah, exactly. You know, then there's juniors, you know.
The thing about that team, to me personally, was there's no legacy for this championship.
Mm-hmm.
You are one and doneers. You won. That's great. But you followed two classes of one and dones, and there'll be countless more after you.
Yeah.
You have no – like, imagine – here's a crazy thought. Imagine if one and done was around in the 90s. Imagine the Fab Five, the Fab Four in Michigan, and Chris Webber and all them were just one and done.
Mm-hmm.
How that would change that school and that culture and everything?
That would have been a real kick in the ass if they had played Duke in the national title game 92 and they were just gone.
Yeah.
You know, we would have never gotten – well, just for historic sake, we would have never gotten the timeout. Would they have had the same cultural significance had they only played 1 year instead of two? That's a really good question. Like, I don't think they would have. You know, they would have been more of like a comet, whereas the fact that they came back a second year – they kind of had some more staying power in college because you got more out of them. You know, whereas this Kentucky team, you got them for 1 year, gone.
It's like, well, the thing is, like, you know, when you're coming in, you already have that kid, the class of next class is already signed behind you as a junior.
Yes, exactly.
So, you know, you're one and done. He knows you're one and done.
Mm-hmm.
It's just sort of, you have no legacy there. You were just a stat. That we're just rattling off names, you know, Deron Lamb, he's tearing it up in the NBA, and, you know, I'm James Young, I'm waiting to do something, and...
Well, there's a point to be made there about legacy, and I think it's contentious, and I think there is a point where there are some players that can be a one and done and have a true impact and be able to earn the right to have their banner raised, and then there are some other guys that are one and dones where it's like, well, you could have done more there. It would have been better off if you had stayed, if you had not listened to the agents, you know, and done something more. But I don't think people are going to hold it against Kevin Durant that he played at Texas for 1 year and say, well, you can't raise a banner for Kevin Durant because he only played 1 year. Well, he's already got a banner up there, so that point's moot. I mean, let me put this as an example. Do you think Anthony Davis would deserve a banner or a retired jersey?
No.
I think so. I mean, well, he was the all everything is 1 year.
Yeah, but that's just 1 year. And, you know, retire number to do 1 year, you've put nothing into the franchise.
But you put everything into it for one season, which for some players is enough.
But that's just one, you know, one player. And again, we've already mentioned he was the once in a decade type recruit to come in as big, as finished. And
so you don't think guys like Cousins, Bledsoe, Julius Randle, like, they shouldn't – that their legacy in college is sort of tarnished because of the fact that they only stayed 1 year. They're more of an asterisk.
Well, the problem is they're just riding. There's nothing wrong with going pro. It's just you have the four other people who are following you who maybe shouldn't go. And that's the, you know, like, well, just Ohio State with their 1 year. Okay, Odin. Okay, Connolly comes out. Everyone's sort of like, he's a project. And then Daquan Cook is like, why?
Yeah.
You're that third guy down. You shouldn't be doing it. You're just doing it because everyone else is.
There's a lot of hangers-on and bandwagon jumpers that go pro because their friends are doing it. And they think that they can ride the coattails.
The people are in their ears going, man, you're better than they were holding you back. Mm-hmm. You saw what you could do with them. Imagine if you're the star of your own team, you totally can do that. And there's players who are teammates who aren't going, the Florida team with Torian Green was a second round pick.
Yeah. If he had gone to any other team, he would have never been a second round pick. Never. Not in a million years. But because he played in Florida, he was a second-round pick.
He's a second-round pick, and then just disappeared super quick. And there's no faulting the top guys for going. It's just you have other people with it.
Now, the 2012 team was a perfect example of maxing out the potential of one and done. 2013's class was a perfect example of how not to do it, and that's the year that he had Nerlens Noel. Now, Nerlens Noel's numbers were solid, okay? 10.5 points, 9.5 rebounds, almost 5 blocks a game and 2 steals a game. I mean, he was a defensive force, but he was very, very, very raw. And then they had Archie Goodwin, Alex Poitras, and Wilcher, who was trying to take the place of Terrence Jones. Just not a fair comparison, to be honest with you. That team did not do well. That is an example of what happens when you get stuck with a one-and-done class.
Well, yeah, you're just now thin, and, you know, it's not Nerland's fault. He had that freak injury.
Yeah, it was a knee injury against Florida early in February.
Yeah, and then that just derails your entire season, really. And then you have nobody back because you're looking for the next year. And
yeah, but they didn't even have a Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. Their best guy after that was Archie Goodwin. And Archie Goodwin was a me first type of guard. I mean, he went first in the draft in 2013, but that's because that draft class was extremely weak, you know. And I mean, Calipari, that was the year that they went to the NIT and they lost to Robert Morris.
Yeah, the team just was like they weren't trying, like they were defeated.
They quit
before they even. They're like, we shouldn't even be in the NIT, and how are we? Mm-hmm. You know, why are we here? And it was, yeah, they were just deflated at that point. But that's the thing with one and done, is you think you're basically banking on all your guys to be good, and you have, you know, it sort of created a logjam, I think, that only, you know, Archie Goodwin, like, I think we sort of both agreed, sort of was like, hey, man, you could totally leave. We're not going to try to talk you back.
You can pack your bags if you want to. You know,
yeah, and then because you have more people coming in right behind him, you know, you have Archie Goodwin. Also next year, James Young. Oh, look,
yeah.
They're both
Harrison twins. Yeah,
and the Harrison twins. Okay, we got people coming in there. There's no guarantee you'll get minutes next year, and again, your team is good, your team is bad. There's just no legacy. Nerlens Noel is just known for, you know, now being the lone 76ers guy.
Yeah, that team was sort of the lost boys of the Calipari era, the only one that didn't make the NCAA tournament. The next version did make the NCAA tournament, but their prospects did not look good going in at first, and that was the version that had it was all freshmen at the time. It was Julius Randle. My name is escaping me. James Young. Their only sophomores were Alex Poitras and Willie Cauley-Stein, and then they had the Harrison twins, Marcus Lee, and Dakari Johnson. They started out a little shaky. They dropped a lot of games in SEC play. They lost 3 times to Florida, who won the conference. Then they caught fire in the NCAA tournament. They beat Wichita State in the second round in a great game, beat Louisville in the Sweet 16, and then Aaron Harrison went on a roll where he just started sinking game-winning shots on teams like Michigan and Wisconsin, got all the way to the national championship game, and they lost to Shabazz Napier and Ryan Boatwright in UConn. They were the first team with all starting freshmen at the time, because Willie Cauley-Stein got hurt during the tournament, they were the first team with all starting freshmen to start the national title game since Michigan's Fab Five. Do you think anything would have changed anything in college basketball if an all freshman team would have actually won it all?
No, they, you know, injuries caused this all freshman team, and it's coming that way now, but. They started slow because they had to he had to develop his sophomores now. Mm-hmm. He had to see Parthis and Willie Stein and be like, oh, I need to now teach these guys how to play, as opposed to just carry your...
They're not finished products, and now it's not the NBA's problem, it's my problem.
Exactly, because they're on the roster. I need to get these guys good to do something.
Now, Julius Randle was legit. Like, the moment I saw him in college, I knew, okay, this guy's a stud. And James Young, good... He played a lot better in the tournament than he did in the regular season. That was a team, and that's the weird thing about freshman-laden teams. Some of those teams that are a lot younger, they actually play their best at the end of the season, not at the beginning.
Well, yeah, it's just sort of like them. They sort of, I don't want to say, don't care about the non-conference schedule, and they just sort of. Okay, we know when to turn it on. We know it's tournament time. We know when people will be watching. Nobody's watching us blow out Western Kentucky.
But that's the thing with freshmen, though. They've never been in that position before, so they don't know what it feels like.
They don't know what it feels like, but to them, you can't tell them nothing. Mm-hmm. They all think they're all NBA. They all think they're the next Kobe and Jordan and Shaq on that team. Mm-hmm. Nobody thinks I need to develop. That's what, you know, Kobe was calling out the his you know, all the high school kids, because they all think they're the AAU kids. They all think they're NBA ready right now.
Which is funny, because Kobe Bryant was one of the first ones to do that.
Yeah. So, you know, that it's just, again, you can't tell people who don't want to learn, and you think they're better than the situation. And it's just, you know, we could turn it on when we need to turn it on. Don't tell us what to do.
Okay, but now that team started buying in on Calipari at the end of the year, and it showed in the tournament when they started putting forth their best performances. Now the next year, it seemed like a lot of those guys were going to go pro. Randle and James Young went pro. They both went in the first round. Julius Randle got picked by the Lakers, and James Young got picked by the Celtics. What was the surprising part is who came back. Alex Poitras came back as a junior. Willie Cauley-Stein came back as a junior. The Harrison twins both came back as sophomores. Dakari Johnson and Marcus Lee both came back, along with a recruiting class that included Devin Booker, a big-time shooting guard, Trey Lyles, who was a top small forward, and then a big man named Carl Anthony Towns, who is a legit 6'11 guy, who's we'll talk about him a little bit later, and then Tyler Ulis, who is a really good point guard out of Iowa. And now they've put together a team that's almost monstrous in terms of size and talent.
Yeah, because there's a log jam.
Yeah, but it's
too
a really
many people
good
came
but it's,
back.
But it's a it's really good log jam.
It's good for you, yes, but okay, let's say this way. The Harrison twins, what have they done this year? I think they've sort of regressed.
They've regressed compared to the tournament, but I feel like there's a lot of players that have stepped up as the season has gone along, mainly Carl Anthony Towns.
Okay, you got Anthony Towns, you got Willie Stein. They're both lottery picks.
Yeah, Willie Cauley-Stein defensively, one of the best players I've ever seen in college.
So you got those two. They're gone. You got Parthis.
Devin Booker is gone. If you ask my personal opinion, I think Willie Cauley-Stein, Carl Anthony Towns, and Devin Booker are definitely gone. And I think both Harrison twins are gone.
But I don't think the Harrison twins are first-round prospects.
They're not, but it's like Deron Lamb. You know, you win a national title on a starting five team. You played in two Final Fours. What else do I have left to prove? And then he went second round of the Magic. It was the Bucks.
And, you know, that's the thing is, like, you're now getting people who are coming back, and you're getting these juniors, and his 7 scholarships he had benchmarked for next year become 4 scholarships.
Yeah, but I think Calipari's done a great job of really balancing that team. He tried to kind of play it off with the platoon system, like, we're going to give everybody equal time by playing different units. Well, they kind of threw that out the window when Alex Poitras tore his knee early in the season, so then they started going into more rotation mode. But I think he's done a really good job of making all those players buy in. Offensively, very efficient. Defensively, I mean, they're ridiculous. I mean, that it's one of the best defenses I've ever seen out of a college basketball team. Scoring on them is like pulling teeth. And they're so big inside that you can't get any success in the paint unless you can draw their big men out of it. And that the only way to do that is by making threes, which you can't do because their guards are all 6'4" or taller. You know, so it's just – it's such a tough matchup with Kentucky. It might be – I don't know if they're the best team I've ever seen in my lifetime. I've been watching college basketball since, like, 1990. But, you know, the UNLV team went undefeated in 1991. I've seen some really great teams since then, like the Illinois team in 2005, the North Carolina team in 2009 with Ty Lawson and Tyler Hansbrough. I don't know if this one is the best team ever, but it's the deepest team I've ever seen.
It's the deepest, which you don't hear that in college.
Is this the best team you've ever seen in your lifetime?
Because there's more. I think this is like how many – look, they're all playing. Mm-hmm. They're all getting missed. How many college teams do you see that are that deep? Usually when you get to the 9th, 10th man, it's just they're like, okay, they're really fringe prospects and – you know, here you have, you know, he's a 5-star guy. Oh, this, you know, this, the 9th man off the, you know, 9th man on the team is, oh, he was the 12th best recruit this year.
Do you think the undefeated stigma is good for them? Do you think it's good, a good hat to wear on your head?
Well, that, there's, if you don't have to lose, don't. There's no, you know, you just keep winning. There's no.
Like, do you think that there is an idea of a, like, that a loss at some point is actually not bad for you?
No, I don't. You don't play to lose a game to teach yourself in the future.
True.
It's just, if all you have to do is just not buy into it and be like, well, this is ESPN trying to fill up 24 hours of news. We don't care. We're just going to go out and play.
Mm-hmm.
So. You know, it's just, again, this is just the deepest college team I have seen. And
whether they're the best, time will still tell.
Exactly. And then next year, bringing in number one rated center, number one rated point guard.
What's the point guard's name? I forget.
Isaiah Briscoe.
Isaiah Briscoe. Okay. And getting the bigs is like typical for them. That's par for the course.
Yeah, that is, but it's just, you know, you're just going for all, and they got a 4-star recruit, so Charles Matthews, so.
Well, I think they might be in a similar position next year, because I think Tyler Ulis will be back. I think Dakari Johnson might be back. I think Alex Poitras will be back, because he's coming off a knee injury, and his draft stock, and this is a big part of it, his draft stock is low. So Calipari gets these guys in a room when the season's over about a week or two later, when the deadline is coming up to declare for the draft or put your name in. You can get them in that room and say, look, I've talked to these advisors, and they don't think you're going to be a first-round pick. You're better off staying for another year so that you can boost your stock, just to sell them on it, sell them on the Kentucky mystique.
You can, but then again, you're just now you've now eliminated yourself from the Thon Maker, the latest Canadian import, or Sheik Diallo. I've seen him play. He's good. He's a 6'9" forward. You've now lost out on these people because, okay, you've got your people you're committed to. You can't now sign 7 people. You now down to 3. And it's not an easy job.
Well, it's not alert. It's not it's not allergic. It's not like the programs are allergic to this, too. Look at Duke's best players. Duke is one of the most talented teams I've seen this year, too. You know who their top players are? They're all freshmen.
They're all freshmen who are
Jahlil
playing.
Jahlil Okafor, Justice Winslow, and your guy, Tyus Jones.
And they're all going to be gone next year, and that's just the first year of...
My personal opinion, just as a takeaway, Tyus Jones, I think, should stay one more year. But that's just my opinion. But he's really, really talented.
He's talented and raw. He would develop a...
I think his lack of size is a problem. A big problem. But he's a great playmaker. He's a great playmaker. And Justice Winslow reminds me a little bit of Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. He's like a really nice small forward who defensively is talented and has great athleticism. Okafor is just really good. You know, he's just good. And
that's
then
just, again, you have the top talent coming in, top five players. Okay, this is a good. This was a good high school class this year.
But the whole thing about it is the Kentucky effect, like, you know, as it's titled, and is that Phil Jackson went to Kentucky just to watch Karl Anthony Towns and Willie Cauley-Stein. You know, and it you were getting this they had a combine, like a slat, quote-unquote combine, that right before the season started, so they could have all these NBA scouts go gawk at Kentucky during their practice session. You can't pretend, as much as people despise, as the traditionalists despise the fact that basically all these NBA people are gawking at college players, and when we're supposed to separate those two realms, I mean, you can't deny that the whole Kentucky thing under John Calipari is working.
That's why he's just, he embraces the system. He knows how to play the system. And, you know, again, you don't showcase your people unless they're commodities. And
yeah,
see, these guys, you totally want them. This is what I have. This is what I'm bringing in.
It's let me give you an example just to kind of, this is a bit of a reach. But it's like, you know, because since obviously we're on a wrestling website, when the NWO spray painted the belt, it was like, oh, what a desecration, what a disgrace. Well, now I think we're at a point, because it's been so long, that whole idea is retro. It's kind of cool to be the rebel. And do you think it's cool to kind of worship Calipari for what he does because he bucked the system and it worked?
No, because he's not the bad guy. There really is no evil NBA.
They think John Calipari is the epitome of evil in some of these schools.
Well, yeah, because, you know,
He wins
and people want to play there. You know, Coach K did the same thing by just,
oh,
you know,
Coach K actually is evil.
You know, it's the same. It's just the same thing. You can't. You lose out on recruits, you just start hating because you can't get the guy you want, and you put months in, all of a sudden, Calipari comes in with his private Kentucky jet, and he just whisked him away in a half hour.
Yeah, I bet that I can say this too, as a guy who follows LSU recruiting, it is a little bit disheartening when you're trying to get a guy for so long, and then one of these big time programs comes in, and it's like, oh, he's gone. And it's a little bit discouraging. It's like, oh, we worked so hard to try to recruit this guy to come play for our little school, and there he goes to one of the big schools. But that's something you have to deal with. It's the same thing in the NBA with the smaller teams. They have to deal with that all the time.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's just, you know,
the allure, you know, the allure, as they say.
I'll put it this way. It's now you're playing for Kentucky. You are just going to use them for a year or two, and then you are gone. You will not have you've sacrificed your legacy just for the pipeline.
Would you be surprised if Kentucky does not win the national championship?
At this stage, yeah. You go undefeated, and you appear to be dominant in every game. Like, there was a few close ones, but at no point was like, oh man, they might really lose this one. They're down like 10 with, you know, or down.
They had a
five.
Couple of scares in SEC.
Scares, but it was still close.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like you're down five and you need to really rally to win. It was sort of like, okay.
They're going to pull away. Yeah. They sort of pulled away and then took the game from them. You know, it wasn't one of those ones where they needed a rabbit out of their ass.
Yeah. I don't see like somebody like Wisconsin or Duke or.
Wisconsin's got the best player in college in Frank Kaminsky, like the most complete all-around player. Duke's got the best three players, like the best trio of players probably, but nobody's got the talent Kentucky has.
Yeah, but I'm not going to cheer for Duke. I'll always root for them to be out in the first round.
You're not going to root for Tyus Jones? That's your boy.
It's still Duke.
And, you know, it's funny, too, because, like, let me give you an example. I mean, LSU football, I'm a diehard fan. Now, Kentucky basketball, I lived and grew up with. Like, Rick Pitino's teams in the early 90s, those were the teams that I watched. I didn't watch LSU's basketball teams. When it comes to LSU football, that's religion almost. And so when LSU does well and one of their players goes to the draft, I'm like, well, good for you. I'm glad you got drafted. But let me tell you something. If one of those players plays against the Saints, my team, I hate that player.
They're just
I do not want that player to do well.
even like, okay, he's from your hometown, okay, but he went to Mississippi or Alabama instead. It's like, well, he's dead to me.
What?
Yeah, oh, you know, oh, man, he's awesome. You know, oh, man, I hate USC. USC sucks. They're cheaters. What, Reggie Bush is in the Saints? I like him. He's talented. You know, it's just...
It's funny.
Nice short-term memory. The same thing, you know, like, you know, the Saints. Oh, Mark Ingram. Okay, I'll talk myself into 4 years, even though he's from, you know, Alabama.
Just don't talk about that. But no, it's funny, too, because if you look at the cities, the residing areas for a lot of the Kentucky players, I mean, it's all over the place. So a lot of these, like, smaller schools, if you look, even, like, the really good college teams on the bigger scales, like, most of them are kind of from the same area outside of maybe one or two elite prospects. If you look at Kentucky, I mean, they're all, like, one's from California, one's from North Carolina, one's from Illinois, one's from Indianapolis. Like, they're getting them from, like, everywhere. That's what happens when you're a big time school.
It's like a vacation basketball camp from them. Mm-hmm. Because like you said, every school has their pipeline. Every school has their thing. But it's just like, well, you have your private jet. I'm going to go to California, get this kid. I'm going to get this all-star team. Mm-hmm. Like Mighty Ducks 2.
Yeah.
Where they just, you know, okay, we got this team. But, oh, we picked in, you know, this kid from California and this kid from Texas. And mm-hmm. It's just an all-star team.
We're going to finish this one off with we're going to take the 18 guys that have been drafted in this in the NBA draft since 2010 when John Calipari took over. Because the other thing that's cool in a weird way about the Kentucky effect, quote unquote, is that you've had all these guys get drafted, but because they're one and done, they're all pretty close in age. So when you watch them in the NBA, it's not like there's this one guy that went to Kentucky and he's like 5 years, 6 years older than this guy, so there's really no comparison. It seems like almost all these guys are pretty close in age, so they're almost like peers when they get to the NBA. It just so happens that they all played at Kentucky. You know, like when Cousins plays against Davis, it's like head-to-head, and it's actually pretty close, you know? John Wall versus Eric Bledsoe.
Yeah, they're all the same. The only thing about it is... let's just get into our list before.
Yeah, go right ahead. You go. You get the first pick, and then I go.
Well, since it's 2011, I'm going to have to go with... I'll go with John Wall.
Okay, so you take the point guard out. Okay.
I know you're going to – I have to give you Anthony Davis.
So I get Davis. Okay.
You would
– Yeah, I have to pick Davis. I'd be an idiot to skip Davis.
Because then I'll take Cousins.
So you take Cousins. That gives you your power forward. You're basically getting the 2010 team. I'll take Eric Bledsoe.
I'll take Bledsoe. I will –
Now, listen, we're not going based on the Kentucky case study. We're going based on their entire careers.
Yeah, their entire careers – I will go Eric Bledsoe.
I took Bledsoe.
Oh, you took Bledsoe?
Yeah, I took Bledsoe.
I'm paying attention. I'm going to change things up and I'll go Nerlens.
You go with Noel, so that's your big guy.
With Cousins there, I need a defensive guy to...
I know he's got... Well, you know what? I was going to take Randall, but I changed my mind. I'm going to go with Terrence Jones.
That's a solid pick. Marcus Teague.
For you, okay. Hasn't done too much in there. Let me see how two.
Well,
two,
now we're getting to people who
two
are
2 points, one rebound. I mean, he was good though in college. Is like right at the end in the tournament as a freshman, he played great. I'll go with Michael Kidd-Gilchrist.
Who still provides nothing. Patrick Patterson will be my glue guy.
Your glue guy, and my glue guy will be. I'm actually going to go with Julius Randle. I know he's got the broken leg, but I'll go with Randle anyway.
Okay.
So, gives me no shooting guard, but my starting five is. Well, my five are Eric Bledsoe, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, Terrence Jones, Anthony Davis, Julius Randle. And yours is John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, Nerlens Noel, Marcus Teague, and Patrick Patterson. That's pretty close, but...
That's the thing with the Kentucky teams. All these players seem to be interchangeable, mm-hmm. all seem to be... We're getting to the point where they're all sort of developing. We realize they're not completed products.
Honest opinion, which team would you take, yours or mine?
I would say mine is a little more complete.
You know, Wall and Cousins, that's an inside-outside you can't stop. You know, I'd probably go the same, but man, Davis is so good. And he has Edzo, which is complimentary, a very good complimentary guard.
You have, like, the more star power, but I try to pick a complete people can cover for other people.
Yeah, more of a position, based on position. You know, I kind of went with the names, so I suffered a little bit there, but I really feel like I got the best player, even though you got the first chance.
I gave you your guy, so you gave can be it. Happy.
And that's going to probably put an end to this one. I hope everybody enjoyed this one, along with enjoying the NCAA tournament. Are you going to be watching any of it?
I will try to catch as much as I can, you know, considering we are like the equivalent of the NCAA tournament on Court TV, with us being an NBA podcast on a wrestling website.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's an NBA podcast talking about college basketball on a wrestling website. It's a lot of layers there.
Exactly.
But on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. Enjoy the tournament. Take care, guys.